At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates, national average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Thank you. Thank you. For those of you who are uninitiated, Playing with Science is a sports science mashup where Neil likes to say where jocks and geeks collide. And I like to say without any concussions by the geeks. Because, you know, when jocks and geeks collide, only one person suffers in that collision.
Yeah, one person walks away.
The other one does not. And normally,
by the way,
go ahead.
In high school, I was a geek jock.
A geek jock?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you were a wrestler.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I intellectually, I associated with the geekiverse.
Right.
But anytime I saw a geek sort of get beaten up or, you know, bullied, that was my sort of superhero. I would, like, the geeks need me.
Nice.
And I would go and I kick, I would just, you know. So I felt this urge to protect the geekosphere as a high school
kid. What's the superhero name for that?
I don't know.
Chuck?
But it needs one.
Yeah, I feel like
I believe it's the Tysonator. Well, that's very cool, man.
So who do you have?
So, but before we get into our guest, who is just so awesome. I'm going to use a different word. Who is such a superb guest.
He said that because anytime I hear him say awesome, he said it would be awesome if you could pass the salt. And I would say, when I grew up, the word awesome was applied to curing polio, walking on the moon. And there's a next generation that has no concept of how to use that word.
And I blame the Lego movie. You didn't see it.
No, I didn't see the Lego
movie. All right. Everything is awesome. Okay. Okay, let me just say, first of all, I can't tell you how long I've been waiting to do that on stage. But normally this show is co-hosted with Gary O'Reilly, who is a former professional soccer player and the co-host of Playing with Science. And he is currently a broadcaster, and he resides in the UK. Unfortunately, his flight was canceled, and so he could not be here.
It was snowing in the UK.
It was snowing in the UK. Yeah. Yeah. No, it was snowing here. And unfortunately, he could not be here. So but he is listening right now. Not right now, but he will be listening to this broadcast. So if we could all give a round of applause to Gary O'Reilly.
Gary.
And so what we do here is we explore the science of sport. And to help us do that today, we have an incredible guest who is a former Olympic silver medalist. And she is also, how many times was it? I gotta look at these notes because I want to get it right. 5-time world champion medalist. Please welcome the incredible Sasha Cohen!
Sasha! I'm so excited to join the fun.
Oh, it's so great.
Hop over here.
Excellent.
Have a seat, Sasha.
Wait, Chuck, what did she get her medals in?
thank you, Neil.
That's okay.
Yeah, the truth is that I took it for granted that everybody would know because you're Sasha Cohen, but she is a
Luge.
I said Luge. Sasha, of course, is a figure skater and a damn good one. And not just a figure skater, you're also incredible ballerina and gymnast. All of those things, like, rolled in and then strap skates on and do it all.
Exactly. I started in gymnastics. I wanted to take hip-hop. My mom directed me towards ballet for skating.
That's because she wanted you to have a job.
Exactly,
hey,
exactly.
What are you talking about? What's wrong with hip-hop?
Don't worry, your husband is still my favorite white rapper.
White science rapper.
But go ahead.
So that was how I got started. I started in gymnastics because I was basically a bundle of energy and I destroyed the house. And they're like, how can we calm you down? So I got put into gymnastics for about 3 hours a day, every day. And when I was 5 years old, I was doing like hundreds of jumping jacks, push-ups, V-ups. And when I got home, I was a very well-behaved child.
A V-up, is that this here?
What's Are you going to show me?
Oh, this? Is that a V-up?
Am I going to show you?
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you're basically like this, and you're going up.
Okay.
Like
cool. Okay. Ah, very
there
cool.
You go.
Okay.
That's a V up.
That's very impressive. I gotta tell you, right.
Let me see your V up.
You know what? I'm good.
You're good.
Yeah. You got it.
Later, Chuck. Later.
Well, yeah, we'll do that.
It exists in the space-time continuum. Just leave it there.
So we of course have Heather Berlin here, Dr. Heather Berlin, who is going to break down the neuroscience because there's a lot of neuroscience that goes into pretty much every athlete, correct?
Yeah.
Like when you talk about the brain and the discipline and they call it muscle memory, but it really isn't muscle memory,
it's
right?
It's actually called procedural memory. So basically when you're first learning, and you'll probably have had this experience, the moves or whatever it may be, you have to really focus and you're using parts of your prefrontal cortex. You need conscious focus, even learning to tie a shoelace for the first time. And then over time, over repetition and discipline to do it all those many times, it starts to become implicit or unconscious, and it moves into the basal ganglia, which is the sort of subcortical part of the brain, and it becomes this procedural memory, or
muscle memory. Which is what we call muscle memory.
Yeah, and it's like riding a bike, and then once you get it into that implicit state, if you become too self-aware of what you're doing, like, oh, exactly how should I hit that tennis ball, or do that, it will mess up your flow. So I imagine that you practice it so much that when you go into a routine, you're almost going on autopilot, right? You want to get to that point at which your body knows what it's doing and you don't have to think about it because the thinking messes it up.
Because Yogi Berra said at baseball, 90% of the game is half mental.
That's
what he said. Yeah.
No, it's true. And I think that's where a lot of elite athletes get in trouble. And it's happened to me on several occasions, is where you train your body to do something over and over and over, but then you have this one moment and you're like, I can't leave it to chance. And so you get your mind involved because you also have, days that you're only practicing an hour a day once you're at competition, and then you're just thinking about it over and over, and this one moment arrives, and it's very hard to put away, the monkey mind because it really wants to be there to help you, but it's like too many cooks in the kitchen.
Exactly, and when you turn down that part of the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex that's making you self-aware.
Yeah.
And that's the inner critic, and oh my God, what should I do? And then if you can manage to turn that down and just enter into the flow state and lose yourself, that's when you really perform at your
exactly.
best.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You better watch Heather. She'll tell you to sink it to the ice. So, Neil, you yesterday, actually, I heard you talking to somebody at another thing we were doing when you were saying that you skate or you did something at the ice rink where you wore figure skates. What didn't you do? What haven't you done?
No, I spent the time in high school as a rink guard.
But not with hockey skates.
Not with hockey skates. I wore figure skates.
Which is very unusual.
Yeah, yeah. The
very
rink guard
unusual.
Is like a little more aggressive with hockey skates, but I have figure skates. Yeah, I had on figure skates.
Now, I'm just trying to figure this out, and maybe you can tell me.
Because that toe pick can hurt you.
That's why you had it.
Yeah, yeah.
You
ever see figure skates? There's like teeth in the front of figure skates. And so, yeah. And there were some thugs who came on who were like
hockey
thugs.
Who knew figure skating was so tough?
There were these thugs. They were like, you know, beefy, thuggy guys. And rather than fight them, I just challenged them to a race from one end of the ice to the other, and everyone parted ways. And they're having hockey skates. So they got to, like, press their feet left and right to go forward.
Yep.
I had on figure skates. I just went up on my toes and just ran. And I got to the end, waiting for them to come. So then they shut up after that. But so I deeply appreciate your craft. And as a
figure skater myself.
As a physicist.
We'll have to do the next episode on the rink.
Oh,
we'll race.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
We'll race.
Yeah.
Oh, no, okay. That. Those are some fight words.
Take this to the rink.
Meet me outside on the rink with figure skates on in a tutu. Then we'll fight.
Are you aware of the physics that, because they call figure skating physics on ice, there's so much to it. Are you aware of the physics when you're skating, or are you aware of it at all?
I think you are aware of it, but you don't think of it in terms like of physics. You know, the way that you define it is like this like hyper body awareness, and you can feel when you take off for a jump if you don't have enough speed, if you slightly throw your shoulder too much, and you can feel in the air that you're off kilter and that you're going to go down hard. And you also know that if you're doing a single, a double, a triple, or a quad, exactly how much torque you have to put in when you leave the ice, because that is what determines like how fast you will rotate and if you'll be able to complete, you know, a certain number of rotations up in the air.
So torque is a force that sets something into rotation. And otherwise, it's just a force giving acceleration to an object. Mm-hmm. So you have force that goes in a straight line, and then you have torque, which is a force turning. So yeah, so there you are. It's a force you are putting between your body, your skate, and the ice, so that you can rotate.
To launch it, like to begin it.
Mm-hmm.
And the same with spinning, and that's something, you know, you'll kind of go into a spin slow, and then you'll glide in, and you'll ride the edge, and then you'll take the right side of your body, and you'll snap it to begin the spin, and then you'll use your arms and legs to increase your speed or slow it down.
Oh my God. So, all right, so. I'm learning how to physics skate. Physics skate. That's right. I'm learning how to physics skate.
You just invent that word.
I did.
Physics skate.
So here's what I would love to do. If for those of you who are listening and do not have the benefit of visual, because everybody is here, if you could stand up and just show us the actual, but you have to talk it through because people are listening at home.
Sure.
If you could show us the physicality of what happens when you're doing that motion. And then Neil, if you can break down exactly what's happening from a physics standpoint, I think that would be really cool. I'm making this up as I go along.
So we can pretend like we're the Olympic announcers. Sasha Cohen.
This is what she's doing.
So Sasha Cohen, she's wearing high heels at this moment.
I am wearing high heels, but I've not done it this way before.
Okay.
So what happened?
So there's two instances, right? There's a jump and a spin. And I feel like if anyone's watched any figure skating, is somewhat aware of the difference. One, you leave the ice, and one, you don't. The jump, you leave the ice. So,
well, Chuck, you got that?
I'm keeping up.
You're with it. Okay, stay with this, Chuck.
So, for instance, like I will start with a sow cow. And so it's something where you're going to take off backwards, and you're going to be gliding on the inside edge of your left foot, and you're going to determine how much speed you want to get going in, right? So I'll be doing crossovers and running, going fast.
Building your speed.
Right. And then people have different entrances. But say, like, when I, many, many, many years ago, I did a quad sow cow, and I wanted to get extra torque. So I would do a turn ahead, and then I would set myself here, and then I would use the edge gliding backwards, the right side of my body, and I would dig in with my left foot into the ice and whip this up. And that's what would initiate the momentum. And I would leave the ice, push off this toe pick, and then immediately snap the weight over my right side. And based on how much I followed through with my right arm and right leg and push down with my left would determine how fast I would spin and if it would be a single jump, a double jump, a triple jump, or a quad.
Wait, can I ask you a question then? How, the way you just broke it down was a very logical, conscious, whatever. But when you're actually doing that, you're not thinking all those things, are you? Are you feeling them?
You feel it.
You feel it.
So I think I'm explaining exactly what I feel.
Right.
But it's like you're very fine-tuned. You know exactly how much speed you need. And you know how much speed is too much that you'll lose control, that it could turn out great, but you have to get lucky, because basically speed magnifies anything. It helps you get more height and more torque, but if you are 1 millimeter off in any direction and you have extra speed, you're going to go down really hard, or your alignment won't be quite right. So people are a little tentative with speed, because that can... You know, you can go up in flames. It's like putting leverage on your house. It can work out really well, or you can go bust.
Now, finally, something I can relate to.
No leverage.
Wait. So I get you gave a brilliant description of how you give yourself rotational inertia. Mm-hmm. Okay.
For a jump, we haven't even gotten to the spin.
But however, you didn't. Well, okay, so in physics, you generally break things apart into components, and you put them all together for the one thing. I break this apart. You told me how you gain spin, but if you're going to do a quad, you have to be airborne long enough to complete the quad before you hit the ground.
Yes.
So
that's part of it, because you'll notice if you've watched figure skating this past Olympics, you will see some people barely get off the ice and they can do three turns, and some people get this high up and they don't complete it.
2 or 3 feet off the ice.
So it really is the rotational
it's
spin.
It's how fast you launch yourself up.
Gotcha.
And then obviously it goes into like, what's your body type? Do you have like wide hips? How fast are you spinning? And that's why men rotate faster and generally do a lot more quads than women do. They spin faster. They've got narrower hips. But, you know, women are more flexible, so we've got better spiral sequences.
How many women have done quads?
You know, a couple have done it in practice, and I feel like maybe like one or two have done it in competition.
And you've done a quad?
I have. A long time ago. Thankfully, YouTube exists and it will always live there. I hope. I'll be like, wow, I used to do that. Now I just sit.
So people must have freaked out. I mean, did the announcer lose his shit?
It was an exciting moment because, you know, people can see when you get really close or you double footed or you step out. But when you actually do it and you're kind of, you come down from four turns and you have to have tremendous amount of strength and balance to catch yourself when you come down, get out. And so it's this moment where it's like, oh, is she going to do it? And you have it, and it's very exciting.
It was exciting. Watch it. You just do it in heels.
It's an extra layer.
So there's the launch and the landing that both matter.
So when I trained, you know, you'd work on explosive muscles for bounce. And then I would jump down off of boxes this high in order to kind of like learn how to absorb all that pressure and momentum coming down.
And you do that with the skates on?
Off ice training, I do it without skates, and then on the ice with the skates.
Well, that would make. Thanks, Sasha.
No problem. Just want to keep it clear. No misunderstandings. But then let me get to a spin, because a spin's very different, because you're not launching yourself out, and it's something that goes for much longer. It's not fractions of a second. It's a spin, you know, can be 30 seconds, it can be a minute, and you'll see most people wind backwards, and they're creating this, it's all about torque in the body, and this is why I realize I'm a terrible skier, because it's the opposite.
So they're winding the spring.
You're winding,
to send
right?
It up. Okay.
And so my hips are going to the left, and my shoulders are going to the right. A lot of abs.
Core work.
Yes. And then you step in, and you ride this outside edge. And then, again, you do the same whip momentum for a jump, except you don't take off, and then you spin. Generally, if I wasn't in heels, I could do more spins. And then once you're there, you'll keep this momentum, and then as I would bring in my arms and my legs, I can just insanely increase the speed of my spin. And likewise, if all of a sudden I wanted to slow it down, I would just open up. And you would see the rotations just kind of almost stop. And so in that way, I was aware of physics. But for figure skaters, we would think about it more in terms of like body awareness of, you know, where your hips are, what torque you need.
Plus, you have to look good doing it.
Yes.
Right, because you're being judged.
And what color you look good in.
Right. There are other dimensions of the analysis, of the rank, of the scores.
Exactly.
Right.
So you actually, yes, can you tell us what is happening when she does that?
The physics, yeah. Yeah, so if you... I'd take my shoes off.
I want to see you say it.
It's not the same.
Wait a minute.
Just,
those of you listening, Neil is taking off his shoes and putting on Sasha's heels.
Cinderella, does it fit?
All I can tell you is this. Prince Charming is never coming back.
Thank you.
In physics, here's the deal. So if you set yourself rotating, all right? So I'll do that right now, okay? So here I am rotating, okay? So that's at a speed. Wait, don't applaud yet. You don't know what's about to come, okay? So
you just spun around.
So you can calculate how much angular... So in physics, you might remember from your physics class if you had it or you... So everything that happens in a straight line, you can think of in a rotation. So there's a force, the rotational counterpart is torque. There is mass, the rotational counterpart is moment of inertia. There is, you also have momentum, and the rotational counterpart is just angular momentum. So here's the thing. Once you start rotating, your angular momentum is constant, okay? It's constant. So if I start spinning, and you calculate the angular momentum by, okay, here it is. It is the mass of whatever your body is.
Which in this case would be the biggest figure skater ever.
Here's the point. So your hands have a certain mass.
Okay.
And they're rotating out at this distance. So you have part of your body mass away from your axis of rotation.
Oh.
Okay, so if you can calculate how much angular momentum that is. Now watch. If I bring any part of my body closer to my axis of rotation, then one of the terms in your angular momentum drops. So what happens is the distance to the axis of rotation drops. But your angular momentum stays the same, so something has to increase. Okay? So, because when you multiply these two numbers, you have to get the same answer every time. Okay? So if I start changing the distance of the mass of my body to my axis, and I make it smaller, I have to spin up.
Nice.
And so there you have, allow me?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am, okay. So I will spin, and then. Okay. And just like she said, because what she needs, right? Isn't that right? So you're spinning, you speed up, but then you can stop it by just putting your mask back out.
So
here's my proposal to you. Okay? Here we go. Okay. So I don't know if this is legal.
Okay.
Hashtag me too.
Here.
No.
So put your arms out. Okay? So you're my skating physics demo in this moment. Mm-hmm. So you have a certain amount of mass coming out here, all right? So
wait, for those listening, right now, Sasha has her arms spread apart.
Spread apart, yes.
And in a T formation, and go ahead.
Exactly. So there's a certain amount of mass along your arm and in your hands. And you also showed earlier, when you start a spin, you might start with your leg out, okay? And then when you bring your leg closer in towards your axis of rotation, you start spinning faster. Okay, so we got this. Oh, I like you have this is an infinity on
it
your
is.
Wrist. Very cool. Very cool. It's an infinity tattoo.
That is very, yes. That is an infinity tattoo.
An infinity tattoo. Good. Okay. Sorry, I didn't mean that. Sorry. Okay. So here's my suggestion. I don't know if it's legal. Next time you do this, I think you can do a quint. Is there such a word?
There is such a word.
Good. Quint, 5 turns. Now, how would you do that? I'm going to say you get some lead weight to put in your hand.
Just put Tom Brady all over again. Tom Brady.
Then
Tom
when
Brady
you
of ice skating.
So when you start, spinning with lead weights in your hand, even if you're spinning at the same speed that you once were, you have more mass farther away from your rotation axis. Mm-hmm. So that as you then bring the more mass in, you will spin faster. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, people will notice if you're grabbing something, holding on to something.
What's going on?
So yeah. Maybe you,
as you skate
metal
around,
as
you skate around the rink with 2 kettlebells in your hand.
So what you do is
just get heavy rings.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. No, you can get a wrist bracelet and lead infuse the wrist bracelet, and you're just it's just your jewelry.
And meanwhile, I build up huge.
So what I'm saying is, if you did that, the same gestures, you will spin faster, and you'll have to land. You have to figure out the landing, but once you go,
I'm gonna throw this back to you.
What's that?
For spinning, this would absolutely work, and it would give me more torque and momentum when I spin.
Yes.
But I think the extra weight would not allow me to get up as high in the air, and so even if I got extra torque when I pulled in, I would still not be able to rotate as many times.
You need to work on this. You need to work
on this. So it's a trade-off.
Yeah.
To think about that.
It's a good thing to think about.
You gotta think about that. So this is one of the interesting physics problems where there are 2 variables competing with one another, and you don't know if one is more powerful than the other or where they meet to get the best combination of both. Right. And that's where you get more interesting, complex problems in physics and in life.
I have a neuroscience problem here that I can address.
What's that?
You know, why don't you get dizzy when doing all of these things?
Oh, yeah! What's
right?
up with that?
So I have an explanation for that.
Because, Chuck, Chuck, if we did that, we'd be like, you know.
Because they're going around and around.
I'm dizzy
and around
right now.
So, you know, there's actually a neuroscientific explanation for that question.
So it's interesting. For jumping, you know, it happens in a fraction of a second, and you don't get dizzy. It's just very quick. But spinning is something where ballet and skating really diverge. You know, if you're a ballerina, you're spotting, you know, like to the edge of the room, and that's how you're keeping, you know, your awareness.
And by spotting, you mean you pick a spot.
Yeah, you pick a spot.
You turn your head very quickly back to that spot.
And you turn.
That right. prevents you from getting dizzy?
For ballet. This is what ballerinas do.
Okay.
They different. Always spot. But for figure skaters, you're spinning so fast, and you're not doing just like kind of one. You're literally doing, I don't know, like 50 turns. And the trick is you have to stay in the same center, so about like 1 to 2 blade lengths. And I don't know, I think it's like something to do with your inner ear, that if you're not traveling and you're staying in the same spot even though you're spinning, you don't get dizzy. But from personal experience, when you do a spin and you do a bad spin, which you get a deduction for, and you're traveling, so you kind of start here and I end up off stage,
that would be
you
bad.
Get out of the spin and it's like a cartoon where you see the stars and you're just like, what, where am I? And so that's why they teach you have your center and don't travel. So explain that inner ear to me in like neuroscience terms.
I shall. So your inner ear consists of these 3 like fluid-filled tubes, right? And each one is at a different orientation, so it's meant to be sensitive to a different orientation. Let's say if your head goes up and yes, like this, or no, or side to side. And within those fluids,
these are the 3 dimensions
of
space.
Yeah, the 3 dimensions, and they're represented within your inner ear in these little canal, these tubes. And within each of these fluid-filled tubes are these little hairs that are like sensing. It's almost like seaweed at the bottom of the ocean. So when you move, it senses and it sends signals to your brain. So if you think about if you're in a chair, let's say spinning, and you're holding a bottle of water, and you're spinning in this swivel chair, and then you stop, the water is going to keep going, right? Because it built up momentum. And the same thing is happening in your inner ear. So it's telling your brain, you're still moving. That's why people get dizzy.
Yeah.
And also there's
messages. That's why when you stop spinning, you fall over because you can't keep your balance because your brain didn't figure out that you stopped spinning.
It thinks you're still moving. But then there's also information. So there's information
brain
coming
so
to your
stupid.
Brain from...
Damn.
But your muscles are telling you stuff as well. There's proprioceptive input, and there's also visual input, right, giving you information.
What kind of input was the muscle input?
Proprioceptive. proprioceptive.
Proprioceptive.
Like proprioception. Yeah, proprioceptive.
Oh, that cleared it up.
I've heard that one before.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, it's proprioceptive.
It's your...
Like proprioception. We good now?
Yeah. Oh, we good.
We're going to move on. You're cleaning right. us up. Yeah.
It's signals that tell your bodies its awareness in space. So your brain is getting that information from your muscles and your joints. The inner ear is telling you you're still moving, and your eyes are giving you information. So that's why they often say, and tell me if they say this to you, when you come out of the spin, different than ballerinas who focus each time they make a turn, but you then are told to focus at a specific point because you want to have your eyes telling your brain, counteracting what your inner ear is telling it, that it's still moving, that you're not moving any longer. And also what you do, I'm sure, is you practice off ice just spinning so that your brain can habituate. So it's not so much that you're spinning in one place versus moving, although the movement is going to cause it to be more confusing because there's moving in different directions, so it'll be less of a movement if you're in one space. But that's not what I think is happening. I think you habituate because you practice, right?
So your brain
that's
just becomes acclimated to spin.
Yeah, only so much, though, right? Because it's still a physiologic effect, right? So,
and what you'll see figure skaters do is they'll spin very fast and then they'll slow down. And they slow down, they're kind of getting their bearings, you know?
And they're readjusting.
So you're kind of easing yourself out of it.
Exactly. And then there's like a trick move that you do is you spin really, really, really fast, and then you stop. And then you do it to the music. It's like, ba-bam. And then you give yourself like a second, and then you're like, you just like, you know, you have choreography, like you built in. You know, we have these like these breathers and movements after a spin.
Sasha, is it true that your fastest spin in any performance is the spin you end on. So you don't have to be graceful and balancy after that.
It's true. People generally do their more strenuous, like wham, bam, hit every position. It's like very dramatic at the very end.
Right.
Also because it takes up a lot of energy and you want to get your jumping passes in earlier. Although you're seeing that change now a lot with the new judging system where you're getting rewarded and getting more points if you jump after the halfway mark. But generally, you want to end on a big note. And so people will do combination spins where you hit like six different positions. You're in a camel, you're in a sit spin, you're in a layback, and then you're on the other foot and your leg's up. So there's a lot
going on. It's like a fireworks
finale. It is,
finale.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a finale. Yeah. It's a fireworks
like,
finale.
Yeah. It's just like, oh, put them all up there. Yeah. Come on.
That's one, not one.
Let
them have
all. Yeah, look, smile and face. Oh.
Everything you got. Throw it at the end.
Exactly. So Heather, let me ask you this, because we are almost out of time. Why is it that, from a neurological standpoint, that is our first kind of foray into getting high? You see children spin around, and then they're just like, oh, I am messed up, man. Like, what is happening there?
Well, a lot of what drugs do is they kind of play with your senses, right? So normally we have input coming in from our senses and our brain is organizing it in a certain way. But when you kind of mess with your senses and the way the brain is interpreting them, that's also what drugs tend to do. And it's interesting because it's a different brain state. You know, and it's not just your inner ear, by the way. Those inner ear, that information goes through that little brain in the back of your brain, the cerebellum, right? It's right in the back of your neck. And what's interesting is that has 2 times as many neurons as your entire brain.
Oh.
Right?
Whoa.
2 times as many neurons. So.
Twice.
Yeah, twice.
It's so. Two. Two.
Twice.
2 times
twice.
As many morons.
But it's unconscious, okay? And people who have complete damage to the cerebellum, they are still fully conscious. I mean, they might have less coordination, they can't do triple axels and things, but they're fully conscious and aware. So we only need basically 1/3 of our neurons to have conscious awareness. But it's interesting how much goes into that ability to have balance. I think the reason why it feels good is that we like different sensations. We like to be outside of our normal, even dream states or creative states or daydreaming. When we're not in that normal state where the prefrontal cortex is on and everything's working properly, it's fun. It's interesting. That's why we like to go on roller coasters or rides that make us feel weird.
So cool. Sasha, when you're performing, you're in an altered mental state, according to this. Was that?
Maybe that's why I became a figure skater. It's like the world is going to be too much.
The world.
Maybe that's why.
I need to skate for 20 years.
Maybe that's why you drink before competitions.
That was our secret.
So, Chuck, I have one kind of hyper geeky thing left to say about figure skating.
Go ahead.
Do we have time for it?
Sure, go ahead.
You sure?
Go ahead.
Okay. But it's like embarrassingly geeky.
Are you sure? You know, you could tell me privately.
Okay, so here it is. It'll take a few minutes, but it's just, okay. most things, when they get cooler, they will shrink.
Boy, do I know it.
Water does the opposite, okay? If you cool water, take its temperature down to 32 degrees, it freezes and gets bigger. The same amount of water occupies higher volume after it freezes. And so the solid water, is less dense than the water from which it came. And the ice floats. Okay. This is profound. Because you can have a lake with fishes in it. Winter comes. Winter was coming. Winter comes.
I like that show.
That's okay. Did you see my dragon tweet with the dragon breath?
I did not see your dragon tweet. Right.
Forget you then. All right. So a lake, so it gets cold outside. Temperature drops below freezing. The water at the top feels this temperature, okay? So what happens? It turns out as the water does get smaller, but then it gets bigger again. And at 4 degrees Celsius, water is at its densest. So the air is cooling the water. It hits 4 degrees. It drops to the bottom of the lake. And then it cools another. Drops to the bottom. Finally, the cold air catches up with the water, and it freezes the water, and it creates a lid of ice. Now, the temperature stays cold. How is it going to get to the water below? It can't. And that ice insulates the lake and does not kill the fish.
Nice.
If the ice were denser, this all relates to figure skating. That's why I said it's geeky.
Sushi.
I told you.
Wait till you get the skates on these fins.
So, if ice sank, then systematically the cold air would freeze the lake from the bottom up. And the fishes would have less and less and less water to swim in, and that last layer would freeze, and you would kill every single fish every single winter. But we have frozen lids over running streams in every municipality, everywhere. Okay. So now...
This really is geeky. You're right.
I told you. Wait. So now, suppose I have a block of ice, and I want to squeeze it into a smaller volume. You can't.
I know why.
As long as it stays ice.
Because.
Okay, so now what?
Oh, that's awesome, man.
I told you.
Yes, you're right.
I told you.
Oh, my God, this is so geeky. It's great.
But it's still coming. Sit down.
Okay.
So now, the geek is building. Okay.
Oh, my God.
So, just let me give a quick aside. Pipes have water flowing in, and it's cold outside.
You let them go.
Okay, watch. And it's cold outside.
I blame myself.
The pipes are holding on to the water. The water is trying to get colder, and it gets colder and colder and colder. It gets to 32 degrees, and it wants to freeze, but it can't because the pipe is holding it. But the temperature gets even colder, and it wants to freeze even more, but it can't because the pipe is holding it. The water will go to 32, to 31, to 30, and it won't freeze until it wants to freeze so badly it becomes ice and pops your pipes. Ooh. No matter what they're made of, it'll pop your pipes.
Oh, now that sounds good.
Becoming ice. Now watch.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay, so wait. So now watch. Okay, so. If you reverse that, if you squeeze ice, you will melt it. If you squeeze it hard enough.
Pressure.
So pressure. Pressure.
Pressure.
So now watch.
Come on, baby. Pop my pipes.
Sasha glides on the ice, not because ice is slippery, but because her skates are sharpened, not like a knife edge, but if you ever see a cross section of an ice skate blade, it's actually concave. It's concave. So you have two edges. You were speaking about which edge you're on. So if you're skating on an edge, her weight, even though she don't weigh much, that weight is sitting on top of a tiny area of metal blade. And pressure is force per unit area. And if the area is small, the same force over that area becomes a higher pressure. That's how the math works out. So what's actually happening when she skates is that the ice beneath her skate blade melts the instant her blade touches it. And she's gliding on a bead of water on top of the ice. That is what she's doing. She's compressing the ice. It melts instantly because the ice can't stay ice. In a smaller volume, it becomes water immediately.
I gotta be water!
Okay, so watch. So watch. So she glides over it. The water, the ice melts, so she's smooth. And the moment the blade comes out the other side, the water refreezes instantly. So you think it's because the ice is slippery. No, it's because the water is slippery. Now, there is a temperature below which even the high pressure cannot melt the ice. There was an expedition to the South Pole in 1911, the Scott Expedition. He had a team. He had sleds with skate blades on it, okay? Gliding over the ice. He got to the South Pole too late because the Admiralson, what's the guy?
Admiral whatever.
He got there. He beat him to it. Okay, fine. So he's ready to go back. Antarctica went into a deeper freeze than usual. The moving was slow. They were running out of supplies. They had to get to a supply station. They got within 11 miles of the supply station and they couldn't go any further. You know why? Because they were moving so slow and it was taking so much energy. They had to eat their dogs, okay? They ate their dogs and that was not enough. And now they got nothing to pull the sled. So the humans are pulling the sled and they're pulling and there's a point where they can't pull the sled anymore. Because the temperature dropped so low, the sled blades were no longer melting the ice on which they glided, and their blades just froze in the ice. He could not make it to the 11 miles to the station, and everyone on that expedition died.
And this is the story that Neil used to tell his children every night.
Okay. Why didn't they walk?
Huh?
Why didn't they just walk and leave the sled?
They were all men, obviously, okay. And they didn't think of that.
They had actually, we got to wrap it up. They had actually collected rock specimens that they wanted to bring back to England with them. And those rock specimens were just sort of dead in place with the rest of them. Later on, we came back, found the rock specimens, and they contained fossils of ferns and other prehistoric life. Evidence that Antarctica was not always ice. This was a scientific expedition, and they gave their lives for science.
Yes.
Chuck, we got to wrap it.
And I'm going to tell you the beauty of that story. Not one of them was black. You will not find a frozen black person anywhere on this planet. Okay. That is it for Playing with Science. Please give it up for Dr. Heather Berlin. Olympic medalist Sasha Cohen. The inimitable Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson. I've been your host for Playing with Science. Also, please give it up for Gary O'Reilly, who is is not here. And our catchphrase is this: if you play with fire, you get burned. Play with science, you get learned.
Chuck it on the house. Woo! Bam! Get home safely. Have a good night.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.